Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. From books to virtual reality, we consider all forms of media in our recurring podcast, Signals and Noise. It features a pair of panelists from higher education in our region discussing items in and about the media at the moment. So there's always plenty to talk about with our panelists. We welcome back Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, Assistant Professor of Journalism and Communication at Cal Poly Humboldt. Jesse, there? Looks like we're getting Jesse on the line. We break in a new panelist this time around. Eric Palmer is Professor and Chair of Communication at Southern Oregon University. In the studio with me, Eric, welcome to Signals and Noise.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you.
So, well, let's start talking about the big media event of the last couple of days, which, of course, was the Super Bowl. We're talking more than 123 million American viewers, which, as I understand it, is the biggest audience any media event has pulled in since the moon landing in 1969. Things are counted a little bit differently now, I understand, too, but Eric, give me the overview of the Super Bowl and the big spectacle that it was.
Well, it's our national holiday, according to some people. It's one of the largest events of the year. It's increasingly politicized. It's interesting to see some of the threads of kind of the national political discourse that surround the Super Bowl these days. And it's central to our culture through the ads, the advertising. Provides context and content for us to share and discuss and be connected socially.
So which do you watch for, the game or the commercials or a combination thereof?
That's interesting. I guess I'm a game watcher, and I did watch the game. And as I was reflecting on coming here today, I was thinking about the fact that the commercials didn't really stand out that much for me this year, even though it is part of the national discussion. So I feel like, you know, at least for me, we didn't get the big banger of an ad that was the thing that everybody should come in and talk about the next week.
I can see that point. And Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, what were the things you were watching for? What are your general thoughts about the Super Bowl and the gigantic size of the audience?
Yeah, so the audience was pretty interesting, and as you already mentioned, it's sort of measured a little bit differently now. But I think, you know, with that audience, between the matchup of actually like who was playing, and you know, people wanting to watch the game itself, but then also that social aspect, where you know we had more and more restaurants and bars, and you know, people going out and doing sort of the post-pandemic socializing of really wanting to connect in that way. And then also, of course, the Taylor Swift factor, where I know lots of my students at Cal Poly Humboldt had no interest in the Super Bowl, but they all told me that they were going to be watching for Taylor Swift. So you have that whole extra set of the population that might not have tuned in otherwise.
Okay, so Jesse gets to ring the bell this time. You mentioned Taylor Swift first, but so that is a phenomenon. So you can report that to us more or less firsthand, that people were in fact watching the game, some of them, and therefore we assume a bunch across the country watching because of Taylor Swift sightings.
Yeah, and we actually had the Seton Hall Sports Poll did a survey ahead of time. And they surveyed a bunch of households. I think it was about 1,500 respondents in this one. And they asked them if anyone in their household was going to be watching specifically for Taylor Swift. And I think it was, let's see, it was between people ages 18 to 34, it was 41%. And then everyone else, 21% of them said, yes, there's going to be someone in their household watching just for that.
Eric Palmer, can you remember anything like this? I mean, we're talking about somebody who is not a part of the action, not doing the halftime show. I mean, the things that we could pick up that Taylor Swift actually said to her boyfriend, Travis Kelce, at the end of the game were things that were picked up on microphones nearby. My God, I can't believe you did it. They won the game. But boy, people by the millions apparently tuning in to watch a football game in which this person is just an observer.
Right. Well, and I think that's maybe the most important takeaway from the entire incident and maybe from the weekend, that, you know, there's some kind of political blowback and some criticism or fears about Taylor's political alignments or these kinds of questions. At the same time, from the NFL's point of view, what a gold mine, right? You literally could, you know, you could bankrupt the NFL trying to buy that much attention from, you know, a star and influencer of that level. So the fact that the NFL is getting it basically for free is from a strategy point of view, view is brilliant for them.
Yeah, plus the fact that, you know, it was a good game, went into overtime, both teams scored in overtime, you know, the final score with 3 seconds left on the clock in the overtime period, all the things that make it a good football game. But let's get into the thing you just mentioned there, Eric, about this whole sub-belief about Taylor Swift and the Travis Kelce pairing being a psyop from the Department of Defense. I mean, this is a time of conspiracy theories. I can't imagine much surprises you at this point.
You know, there is something that surprised me a little bit, which is that I had kind of formulated an internal theory or an internal hypothesis that all of the social media discourse about Taylor was just talk, right? And that folks in general didn't really believe it. They just chattered about it. However, I was just looking right before I came on the call here, looking at some polling data reported, I think, by the Washington Post that indicated that actually there's a lot of folks out there that believe they respond to polls claiming that they believe the conspiracy theories.
18%. I just saw myself. Yes.
Exactly. Thank you. So they believe, you know, significant chunk of people in the world, you know, kind of automatic. Authentically holds the belief that Taylor Swift is part of some kind of nefarious scheme.
Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, this is quite a stew then. I mean, the NFL, Taylor Swift, and conspiracy theories involving politics. This is, you know, kind of like a dream for making the internet go crazy, isn't it?
It really is. And I mean, that's the thing with conspiracy theories, right? They're exciting, they're dramatic, they're a distraction from all the depressing and boring things in the world. And this one is, you know, this one falls right into that, where it's it elicits emotion out of people, and it really, you know, it gets people's attention and it gets people to engage, even if the engagement is only, you know, social media related. But yeah, it's a great distraction, to say the least.
Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein from Cal Poly Humboldt, Eric Palmer from Southern Oregon University with us for another edition of Signals and Noise here on the Jefferson Exchange. Let's move on, as long as we touched our toe in the politics water, to continue in that vein, because there's been some observations lately about the coverage of the age of the two presidential candidates. We'll talk about Jon Stewart in a moment and him dubbing this Antiques Roadshow 2024. But the fact that we do have two very old candidates, but it seems like there's a bit of a difference, at least in the perceptions among some people, about how the media portray Biden's oldness versus Trump's oldness. Jesse, what do you think?
Yeah, it definitely seems like there is a clear double standard. And again, it's just, as you said, it's in the media portrayal of it, not necessarily that everyone believes this, but there is that belief among a large swath of our population, of course. But yeah, the double standard is quite interesting. But when you look at the facts that, you know, most mainstream news media has reported on that there have been slip ups. Right. We had Biden mixing up the president of Egypt with the president of Mexico. On the other side, we have Trump mixing up Nancy Pelosi with Nikki Haley. And he even saw a photo of E. Jean Carroll and thought it was his ex-wife, Marla Maples. So, you know, the facts are there that there's been these trip ups, but there's certainly a lot more focus on Biden being old. Which I find really interesting, but also Biden is the current president. So there is just more media coverage of Biden right now. People are paying more attention to Biden right now, which, of course, we're most likely going to be seeing that pendulum swing the closer we get to the election. We all know the media spectacle that is Trump and how mainstream media really does like to cover him. So we might end up seeing more of that as time goes on.
Eric, what are your thoughts on this realm, the old versus old thing?
I just have to agree with all the points made. One thing I think, you know, there's a lot of folks that are kind of disappointed that it appears to be coming down to this choice, the 2020 choice, over again. But I also have to observe, you know, separate from the media kind of framing of this journey, the challenge of the political realities, right? The commitments of voters are a large part of the reason that we're here now. And so to kind of fantasize about some pathway by which we might have had different candidates as part of this, coming out of this process, that's a tough road. You know, it's tough to tell an incumbent president that they shouldn't run again. It's tough for them to relinquish the power that they have by declaring themselves lame ducks. And so the So the journey that we're on, I think, might have been inevitable just because of the political context.
Yeah, I do. Gene Lyons, one of my favorite columnists from Arkansas, wrote late last year, I think, and it's, you know, I'm not so sure we're going to have these two guys when we get to the end of the road. That'll be interesting to watch. I guess I leave that in the back of my mind as a possibility, given the fact that we're talking about people who are 81 and 77 years old. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. We are talking to Eric Palmer from Southern Oregon University, Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein from Cal Poly Humboldt, and let's go with an extended version of pick three, and I'll start with you, Jesse.
Yeah, so one of my favorite pick threes this week is actually just paying attention to those Super Bowl ads. You can, listeners can go back and watch them. There's actually, USA Today has an ad meter with all the 59 ads ranked. And it is kind of interesting. I don't like the side of it that is all about consumption. But from just a, you know, popular culture and the cultural climate of this country perspective, it is really interesting to see what's being put out there. And on that note, speaking of, you know, old white guys, I want to point out that with those ads, one thing I did find really interesting was to some degree, there was really a lack of like diverse storytelling, because mm-hmm. the majority of the directors of these ads were white men. And so those were kind of still the stories being told, which we see a lot, of course, in media in this country. But yeah, I found that to be a little bit noteworthy. There were a few outliers in there. And yeah, I think our listeners can go check those out. A few that might be worth checking out if folks aren't going to listen to, or if they're not going to watch all 59.
Well, plus you can see extended versions, I should point out, too. I saw longer versions of some of the ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the extended versions, definitely. But yeah, there were some that really kind of, you know, played on the pathos and pulled at the heartstrings, like mm-hmm. the Google Pixel 8, the Javier in Frame. And that was actually made by a blind director, Adam Morse, and the character in the sort of story behind the commercial was also blind. And that was kind of an interesting sort of told from a different perspective version. And then there was the Kia ad, which was pretty sweet. And yeah, lots of celebrity and spectacle, though, just as a heads up in case anyone wasn't paying attention to those Super Bowl ads. Another one of my pick threes is the David Sedaris book, The Carnival of Snackery, mm-hmm. which is just straight from his diaries. I've been loving that lately. And then a sweet one for Valentine's Day is the episode of This American Life, episode 791, that they just rebroadcast this week. It's called Math or Magic, and it's all about finding love and the head versus the heart. And so very timely and sweet.
Okay, so pick three now for Eric Palmer. Have at it.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So I think maybe the biggest thing in my life in media this week was the opening of Blue Sky to public signups. So I've been kind of active and committed to using X, formerly known as Twitter, for a number of years. I've been backing away from it, as have many other folks quite recently. And Blue Sky is one of the new kind of Twitter alternatives that has emerged, and had previously been invite only to participate there, but they just opened it up this week, and the chemistry of the site is changing, and it's interesting to see.
Okay, that's bsky.app, I see.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other big thing to me on the pick three this week, maybe the biggest thing, is the return of Jon Stewart to The Daily Show. So like many folks, I was a little skeptical that he could recapture the magic, but on Monday night I was watching, and he was very solid, I thought. Came to play, and look forward to having his voice in the national conversation this year.
He basically doubled the audience of the Trevor Noah years, I see.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly, yeah. And finally, the last thing I want to throw out, the most delightful thing I did this weekend, was watch the making of episode for the Marvel Cinematic Universe film, The Marvels, on Disney Plus. So approximately hour-long documentary about the making of the film, behind the scenes, all the special effects, all the performances, all the actors, lots of, you know, illustrating what the crew work looks like, which we really value here, is having a film program that's very crew and production oriented. And I just found it delightful, and I encourage anybody that has access to also check it out.
Okay, great list of pick threes, good discussion, and we'll have links to all the things that our guests mentioned in the pick threes. Our panel is Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, Assistant Professor of Journalism and Communication at Cal Poly Humboldt. Thanks again, Jesse.
Thank you.
And our rookie is Eric Palmer, professor and chair of communication at Southern Oregon University. Glad to have you on the panel and looking forward to future Signals and Noise events.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Short break on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk about petitions out there in the woodwork in the region for the coming elections. Stand by.